for Jewish Women Oral History 2. Would you give us your name, please, and where you live?
Shelby Nassau, 6315 Forbes Avenue, Pittsburgh, 15217.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Maslov, or Sophie, everybody calls you Sophie. You were interviewed previously, and that interview was over in 1987. A lot of things have happened to you since, and I think we should start with your being the president of city council and the mayor, Richard Caligiuri, dying, and you're taking over the job. Can you give us some detail on that?
Sylvia, you have to say the National Council of Jewish Women.
I did.
To give the names and everything.
I did.
Well,
she tuned out. Okay, I did do that.
I don't know how much you already know from previous interviews, but I was elected president of council by the other members of council. That's in Pittsburgh. I was the first Jewish woman ever elected president of council by my peers, by the other 8 members of council, the first Jewish woman. Mm-hmm. I served as council president for about 7 months, and then Mayor Caligiuri died suddenly in the
what
law.
What was the date of that?
It was May 15th. I don't remember the year.
1987, I believe.
87, yeah.
Yeah, May 6th.
Oh, May 6th.
You were sworn in May 88. You were sworn in as mayor May 6th, 1988.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because I was mayor for close to 6 years when I chose not to run. At any rate, Mayor Caligiuri died during the night, and I was sworn in the next morning as the first female mayor of the city of Pittsburgh. Also, the first Jewish mayor of any sex in the city of Pittsburgh. And I served for close to 6 years. And when my term ended, I had 5 years and 9 months or something like that. And I chose not to run again.
We did ask you, speaking of that, why did you choose to run on your own the first time, and then why did you decide not to the second time?
Well, I finished Mayor Caligiuri's term. And somewhere along in the term, I decided that I had a lot to contribute. I wanted to be a credit not only to women, but to the Jewish people of Pittsburgh. My heart was always with the Jewish people. My mother was an immigrant, never spoke a word of English in her life. I felt an attachment. And I wanted to prove to the people of Pittsburgh that the Jewish women particularly had a place in the scheme of things. And along in the middle of the term of mayor that I finished for Mayor Caligiuri, I decided that this was a job I could do. And so I chose to run for a full term. I ran against 6 men, which might have been a good thing because it split the vote up. Eventually, 1 or 2 dropped out, and I was left with 4 who I ran against. And of course, history will record that I was elected and served for a full term. When my term was up, I was in my 70s, and it was a very stressful job, and it just required too much self-sacrifice, because it was a kind of a job that was 7 days a week, practically 24 hours a day. I'd wake up in the middle of the night and hear about a water line breaking or something. It distressed me very much, and it really cost me a lot, because it was very difficult. I was constantly running, constantly tired, because it was so difficult. And so I chose not to run again. I felt that I had left a mark in the city by that time.
Okay. When you took over as mayor for Caligiuri, did you feel strange? Were people helpful? What was it like when you had this dropped in your lap?
Well, it happened in the middle of the night, of course. And it was probably the most distressing night of my whole life, because while I kept in touch with Mayor Caligiuri, in the last couple of weeks I used to visit him, and he came in every day. I used to visit him in the office at his request, and we would talk generally about the city and about policies. I now know that he knew that he was going to die, and he wanted somebody to know exactly. And I also think that I was elected president of the council because of his influence. I think he felt, looking over the other members, that I probably was the lesser of all evil.
So you admired Caligiuri. There were strangers here in town recently, and I showed them the statue, and they couldn't get over what a tribute. Did you agree with the people seemed to love him? Did you think he was worthy of that?
Well, he was a very compassionate man, and I admired that in him. And he came up practically the same way I did, from immigrant background. He made his own way to where he was. And we had a lot in common. Besides that, we had known each other for many, many years, because I was in council for 12 years while he was a director of parks and while he moved around. So that I felt, you know, that I had a real good background. Now, when I took office the next morning, unlike this present mayor, I chose to keep everybody in office. I didn't make any changes at all, because I felt that there would be a disaster. We suddenly turned everything over. So I kept everybody in line that was in office, and I think I put in my office people that I thought were very, very competent and would be in a position to help me, because I knew I needed help. I recognized that right away. I knew that I would need help. And it turned out well, as I thought.
Who was that, Lou Borman? Who were they?
Well, Jim Turner was one.
What was his job?
Jim Turner was the first executive assistant, or secretary, or whatever title. And by coincidence, I went to school with his mother. I knew his mother at Fifth Avenue High School, but he was extremely competent.
But so there's a name I don't know. What happened to him?
Well, when I was through, he chose not to stay on.
But he had been with you your whole term?
My whole term.
He never made the news particularly, did he?
Well, because that's the kind of a person he was. But he was extremely knowledgeable, extremely knowledgeable. And that's one thing I did all through my administration. I recognized that I needed professional people, and I needed their counsel and their advice. And I went with that all the time. Every one of the department heads, I little by little in the 6 years that I was there, replaced some of the department heads, replaced some of the people in the mayor's office. But by and large, I kept people who were educated and who knew government, who knew finance. And I never regretted it, because they were extremely capable. In the end, of course, the final decision rested with me. And the people around me always told me that they trusted my instincts. One thing that was very, very important to me all the time was how the average person in Pittsburgh who had no interest in politics at all. I was most interested in potholes and in garbage pickup and cleanliness. All those little things, you know, that maybe were not earth-shattering, but I considered them far more important than anything else, than keeping the pirates in town and all this stuff that we're going through now. And a lot of the things, of course, that are being said now absolutely untrue. I'm very bitter about that.
Which one? What things?
All the things that they're saying. This business in magistrates' court that he has said, that they've said that there's $8 million outstanding. That goes back to politics. Goes back to Tom Flaherty when we made him cut his office in half because he was totally incompetent. Now he did this survey, which is absolutely untrue. But the reason I don't call him on some of these things is because they would like to keep it going. You know, that could feed the newspapers for a week. Plus the $27 million, which Tom says we left in debt, is absolutely untrue. And to this day, they have not been able to show me where that is. Matter of fact, they fired a lady who was top person in the budget department because she questioned us. They just fired her last week, incidentally. Carolyn Marks, you know her?
I don't. So I gather that I love all this, that you don't think too much of Tom Flaherty, which I certainly have to agree with, and you are a little bitter about Tom Murphy.
Well, my problem with Tom Murphy is that I realize that he's trying to do a good job, but what he did that I think was unforgivable was to clean house. Absolutely. Clean house if he started, and maybe he should have his own people there, it goes without saying, but I think he should have kept many of these people on until things got settled, until people knew. People tell me that they have no idea who to talk to about any issue, because the people that are there are all new. They don't know background, they don't know any of these things. Besides the fact that he totally ignores me, I am so hurt, because many of the projects that I began, that were funded and began under me, when groundbreaking or ribbon cutting or something happens, they never invite me.
You think that it's deliberate or that he's just not thinking?
Well, I think, and I say this without any ego, honestly, so because I have no ego, I think he's afraid I will upstage him.
What?
I think he's afraid I will upstage him. Now, that may just be my perception, but I believe that. I'm not invited to anything. What particularly pissed me off was when they opened the Burlington and Gimbel's.
Uh-huh.
For 5 or 6 years, I trekked to St. Louis to the May Company every couple of months. The May Company didn't want to sell Gimbel's because they didn't want competition. That's a fact. And I used to go there and plead with them to sell it. They had a figure that was exorbitant, and they wouldn't do it. Finally, I convinced them. I threatened them. I threatened to go to the public and expose them because they wouldn't sell it. And I know I did that myself. We finally got a buyer. We finally sold it. We did all of this, and then when they opened it, they didn't invite me. And I had spilled blood trying to get that sold, because that corner was such a nice store.
Right. On the side, would you ever state these things for publication?
No. I don't want to rain on his parade. I want him to do a good job for the city, and I want the people of Pittsburgh, you know, to benefit from all of this, whatever his plan is. Problem with Tom is that he's had no experience in administration. He was a member. I was in council for 12 years, so that by the time I got to the mayor's office, I knew all the players, and I knew every street in the city of Pittsburgh, and I knew what the first thing I did, of course, was put street signs up on every street.
I love that.
Oh, I used to die when people would say, well, you turn left where there used to be a gasoline station. Mm-hmm. People in Pittsburgh said that all the time, and I thought those things were important.
There are street signs on alleys.
I know, I love it.
I know. Well, because I said when we started it, we had a grant from the federal government, and I said, we're not going to. After we got them all done, we found out that people had been calling certain streets something else from what we knew on our map. So we had to go back and change them and call them what the people were accustomed to calling them, and I was glad to do that, too.
So you would say that your gift was doing the things that people really care about, little small people, and maybe not getting into big political shows, would you say that?
That's true, and I did a lot of big things. We negotiated, we had all our property on 2nd Avenue that the DER had condemned. We spent a lot of money putting water lines in and sewer lines in on 2nd Avenue, and then all our property stood there. It was very distressing. Finally, we convinced Union Switch and Signal to build there, and they were going to employ thousands and thousands of people. And I grew up in the Hill District on Robert Street, and I used to walk to town every day. And every time I'd go up there in the last few years, and it'd be all on valuable property, so close to Pittsburgh, so close to downtown, none of which was producing any revenue or any taxes. We convinced people to build. Now we have. We'll have 500 units up there.
Oh, it's very attractive.
Yes, and it's so close to town. Of course, there's a lot of quirks that have to be ironed out, but they are practically all sold or rented. It's called Crawford Roberts. It's
near the Civic Arena. Beautiful.
Right above. All that area was distressed and an eyesore. That was the biggest project, the biggest housing project in Pittsburgh in maybe 25 or 30 years. So that I consider those big things too.
Okay. And would you say that, in your own quiet way, you started these or you inspired them? Were you resentful especially when in your first term, when people said it was that you were a caretaker mayor?
That was the perception when Carol Geary died. They all thought, including all the politicos in Pittsburgh, they all thought that after I finished his term, I should step down, that's what I was perceived as a caretaker. And that was not so, because even finishing Mayor Caligiuri's administration, there were a lot of problems and a lot of things that had to be ironed out. And I thought, I'm not going to walk away now. After I've started all these things, I'm going to stay. And I did. And even to this day, I never made peace with some politicians. They resented it then because I didn't back down. And they still didn't. When I ran, I didn't have the support of the organization that I had supported for 40 years. But
do you think that was because you were a woman?
I think so. And I, between us, I think it was because I was a Jew.
You really do?
I really do. Because I called them on it when they'd say Jewish grandmother. Mm-hmm. Periodically, it would appear somewhere. And I called them on it every time. I'd said, well, you didn't call Governor Casey an Irish grandfather.
Good for you.
Because he was Irish. And I called, for a while I let it go. Because I didn't want to be picky. But after a while, it began to annoy me. And I called them on it every time. What's the guy's name on KDKA?
Sigmund.
Paul. Paul Longer. Anyhow, he did it constantly. So I finally called him on it.
How did he respond?
Oh, they laughed. That was a big joke, you know. And then age became a problem. They'd start off every interview with, what's your age? And I said, it's the same as last year. It hasn't changed. And then I said the same thing. I don't see you asking any of them in their age.
Good for you.
And they stopped it, too.
I know. I was sitting in the press one day, and the phone rang. I sat next to Barbara Cloud, and she said, oh, hi, Sophie. You called her about her something she had written in her column.
Yes.
She couldn't get over it. She was
well,
so
I'm an avid reader, as you know. I read the papers from cover to cover. And I always did. And my favorite, of course, was Tim and Eve. He and I had a thing going. And I know he misses me because he doesn't have a subject that he had with me. But I have a tremendous sense of humor, and I refuse to take myself seriously. The job was serious. I didn't fool around with the job. But as for myself, I knew the day would come when I'd walk away, and everybody would forget. And I knew
no one would forget. Getting back to politics a little bit, when you decided that you had a project, like you wanted to do Burlington, the Gimbel's Garden, how did you go about it? You call your counselors around, how did you approach it?
Well, every morning I would meet with my immediate staff. I'm an early riser, and I would be in the office no later than 8 o'clock every morning. And I'd call them in, and every day I'd say to them, now look, this bothers me. That Gimbel's Corner bothers me, or the Hill District bothers me. All that valuable property so close to town, where people would like to live, and it would go on the tax rolls. Now, what can we do? And they'd make suggestions, and I'd say, well, let's move on it. Problem was, it always wasn't that easy. Property had to be acquired. You had to deal with people. You had to interview people. You had to know background. Many instances, a lot of these things required a lot of background, and I didn't have the time. So I'd say to them, now look into this and tell me what the problem is. Tell me why this can't happen. Because I felt I had qualified people who would do those things, the URA. And then I'd say, well, now, how much money does it take? Where can we get it? Can we get it through a bond issue? Can we go to Harrisburg for help? Can we go to the federal government for help? How much money does it require? And I personally went to Washington many, many times and lobbied for money, and also went to Harrisburg many times, and they were very receptive.
That's what I was going to ask you. When you went to Washington or you went to Harrisburg, did they give you the respect of your office?
I think so. Yeah. To begin with, see, I've known them. I've been involved in politics since I was 16. So that when I went to Harrisburg, I knew all of the legislators, I knew all the senators, I knew the governor, the lieutenant governor, I knew them all. We were on a friendly basis, and they knew me. They knew that I wasn't there to promote myself or that I was looking to run for a higher office or something, you know, like so many politicians do. Most jobs are stepping stones to something better, especially if they're real young. And they knew that was not my object. So that I really had to step up because I knew them, had a relationship with them before I even started.
And you're saying that there was one man who left the city government. Was he the finance person? He really had been in it for so long, kind of in the... Who was the...
Ben Haler?
Yes.
He was the head of...
Would you say that he was the one that... I was surprised when he left. I was surprised.
Well, he knew he was going to be fired.
You mean when the new administration?
Yeah, he knew. So he was offered a job by Rendell in Philadelphia to be the finance director there. So you might know how qualified he was. Ed was there. As a matter of fact, everybody in my immediate staff was grabbed up right away. Even Lou Borman, you know, was grabbed up right away. As a matter of fact, in the end, he had three offers. So that practically everybody on the immediate staff was grabbed up. George Whitmer, who was extremely qualified. They were all offered jobs because none of them wanted to stay on anyhow with the new administration. So they were so qualified. So as I said, when most of the projects started with me, and then when we wanted to do low interest loans, when we wanted to qualify for that, we went to the banks. The banks in Pittsburgh didn't want to give mortgages for a few thousand dollars because they couldn't make any money on that. Well, we made them do it. We took all of our business away from all of the major banks in Pittsburgh until they qualified. These are little things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our rehab program, now, they're making a big deal now about selling, I heard on radio the other day, they're making, Tom's having a big sale at Station Square to sell property in Pittsburgh, you know, it's been, it's for sale,
mm-hmm.
Which is crazy. I've been doing that for years. But the problem is, that property is in distressed areas. Nobody wants it anyhow. You could try to sell it for 50 years. Nobody wants it.
You're talking about housing.
Housing, yeah. Now, Tom's going to have a house at Station Square, and he's calling all these people in, and he's going to have a big deal, you know. We've been doing that for years. There's really nothing new under the sun. All of these things we have been doing before. And this pirate situation today.
I thought of you, and then now they're talking about the stadium. You're saying, I told you so, right?
Well, see, 2 years ago, the state legislature gave the city of Philadelphia something like $4 million for a convention center. And it was my opinion, and I said this to the guys, you know, we ought to try to get some money for something. If they're handing out building money for them, let's build a stadium, because everybody said that they didn't like the stadium for playing baseball. Well, everybody went bananas. As it turned out, they were sorry they didn't do it because look at the success that Baltimore and Cleveland have with their stadium. And now the Pirates. Pirates are an issue, a sad issue. And I can't see. We need the Pirates, I agree, for the aesthetic thing that they do for the city. Yeah, people come here and live here because they like the sports. But it is going to be a bottomless well. When I was there, and we took over the Pirates, the city gave them $20 million, plus all the other investors. I think there were 12 of them who each invested $2 million. 5 years later, they're busted. Another $8 million. 5 years from now, it's going to happen again. Because the people tell me, those who know, and I've talked to a lot of sports people, Pittsburgh doesn't have a market to support it to. Sure, they have no place to draw from. Also, I cannot tax people to pay $3 or $4 million to players. That drives me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, now, we admit that the spinoff from the Pirates in Pittsburgh and the fact that a lot of people come to Pittsburgh to live because they like the sports, I'm still not convinced that it's the right thing to do. Now everybody seems to think it's great, and this is what we ought to do, and we're going to give them SC, we're going to give them $8 million. 5 years from now, we're going to be back where we started from. And the investors, those that have $2 million in there, haven't gotten a cent's worth of interest on their money. They can sell that. There are many franchises that would buy that, and they could realize a lot of money for their investment. And I think this is going to happen.
This gives me another idea, and we're talking about money. Certainly, as a politician or mayor or council, you didn't do it for money. Do you ever think to yourself, if I had gone into private business or something, I could have been, you know, very rich? I mean, salary-wise, was it?
$65,000. I thought of that many times in my whole life.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working in the courts, and I devoted so much time to politics and to civic projects and the Jewish Federation, many times I thought, if I put this much time and energy into private industry, I could probably make a lot of money. All I had was my salary, and with the tax situation, it wasn't all that great. But I loved what I was doing, because it was something I had been doing for, since I was 16. That's how I started. I think I told you this early on. My mother couldn't read or write English. She was a widow, and I used to pay the bills, and I used to go downtown from Roberts, we'd walk the town and pay the taxes and the water and all those things. And when I go into any of those big buildings, I pay the bills and then I'd walk around, I'd look in the offices and I'd go up to the courts and I'd look at all these things and that became my ambition. I thought this would be a nice place to work. And so I cultivated it, I worked on it. I'm not, in my ignorance, I knew how to go about it. So that I believe that if I had put that much effort probably into something else, maybe I could have made money. But after a while, it really didn't matter because there's only so much money you need to do, and I find out.
That's true. I often think about, the police or firemen and so on that do this vital job, some of it very dangerous. And do you feel that, that they are not compensated for what they do?
Oh, I think they are.
You do?
I think of course, you can't buy a life, that goes without saying, and they are dangerous jobs, but the firemen don't have a fire every day.
Mm-hmm.
If you spread that out, both the firemen and the police in Pittsburgh are very well paid.
Mm-hmm.
Very well paid. Probably the best, they're paid better than the city employees. They have a tremendous union. We go to arbitration every time their contract comes up because we think they're overpaid. The arbitrators always rule against the city, constantly. We know what to expect. So that I think they're well paid. It's a dangerous job, but we don't have a shortage of candidates for it.
Yeah, that means we're going to have to turn it, right?
Okay.